tied at 2 apiece. And in baseball, the Cubs and the White Sox conclude their Crosstown Classic Series this afternoon with a matinee at 1:20, and the Cardinals are taking on the Royals at 7. You're listening to WILL.
WILL programming is made possible by Krannert Center for the Performing Arts, announcing the 2013-2014 season featuring Elnora, the Guitar Festival, Chicago Symphony Orchestra, Diavolo, Nathan and Julie Gunn and Friends, the Joshua Redman Quartet, and more. Tickets are on sale Saturday, August 10th at 10 a.m.
You're listening to WILL. I'm Chris Berube. Let's take a look at your weather this hour for Champaign-Urbana today. The rest of the day, we're expecting a 50% chance of showers and thunderstorms with a high of 85. High winds today, though, we're going to get gusts of up to 30 miles per hour. Tonight, showers and thunderstorms are considered likely, 60% chance of rain and a low of 68. Tomorrow, showers and thunderstorms are probable. Chance of precipitation is about 70% and a high of 83 expected. By tomorrow night, showers and thunderstorms likely, 70% chance of rain, a low of 67. We should see rain throughout the weekend, 70% chance of showers through Saturday and Sunday. Right now, it is a high of 79 for Saturday and a high of 71 for Sunday. As we had announced earlier on in the program, there is a tornado warning, a tornado watch, actually, in effect, that includes 22 counties and a few in central Illinois, including Macon, DeWitt, Piatt, Moultrie, and Peoria, among others. We'll have a full update on that warning on our website, will.illinois.edu. That tornado warning includes the cities of Bloomington, Decatur, That tornado watch includes the cities of Bloomington, Decatur, Galesburg, Havana, Jacksonville, Lincoln, Normal, Peoria, Shelbyville, Springfield, and Taylorville. You're listening to WILL.
Support for WILL comes from Urbana's Market at the Square, happening every Saturday morning, rain or shine, from 7 a.m. to noon at the corner of Illinois and Vine Streets in historic downtown Urbana. Learn more at urbanaillinois.us/market.
You're listening to the Afternoon Magazine on WILL. More than 6,000 bills are before the Illinois General Assembly this spring session. Legislators have until Friday to get through them all. And with some of the biggest policy issues facing the state still outstanding, some measures will move, some will change, and some will die pretty quick deaths. Illinois Public Radio's Amanda Vinicky spoke with a recent University of Illinois graduate who founded a company that aims to make it easier to follow what's happening in the Capitol.
Like so many endeavors, this one started small. A friend was interning for a lobbyist in Springfield who wanted a better way to track legislation.
And I thought at first we'd just develop this product for him, ship it out, and we'd be done.
That was back in the spring of 2011. Now, this is how the thin, eager, suited U of I grad introduces himself.
My name's Steve Marciniak. I am the founder and president of TrackBill LLC.
Marciniak says he quickly realized there was a market for monitoring legislation. So rather than develop a product for one individual in one state, he's developing one that could cover every state and Congress. For now, the website covers Illinois and Missouri. And recently, TrackBill unrolled an iPhone app. He shows me how it all works.
You entered House Bill 3411, so now you're tracking that one. You can see an overview, synopsis, actions.
You can search by bill number, sponsor, statute, or topic. And sort of like on Google, results are ranked based on how many times a keyword, say education, pops up, as well as popularity and relevancy. Once you choose to track a bill,
you're going to see that bill is now added to your list. So now you're going to receive alerts either via email or text.
Information that, with the click of a button, you can send to Twitter or Facebook. Marciniak's not a web or software developer. That's the job of his 17-year-old, yes, 17-year-old roommate. But clearly he has a grasp on the technology.
I wanted to be an astronaut, and I thought that was pretty cool. So I took aerospace engineering at the U of I, and turns out there's a lot of physics and calculus, differential equations, chemistry. I didn't really care for. Apparently, you need to know that to build a rocket.
He briefly turned to investing.
I traded stocks for a while and thought I wanted to do finance. Turns out it was just like I found it kind of stressful and just always changing on a daily basis. And I felt like my mood would shift because of that. And I didn't like that. I wanted to be in control of my own thing.
Lo and behold, NASA came calling.
They wanted me to buy the parts for the rockets.
Read Forbes or Business Insider. Consistently, a key trait of a successful entrepreneur is the ability to take risk. Here's what went down at Marciniak's interview with NASA.
they asked the typical question, well, why do you want to work for NASA? And I said, well, you know, I'm very innovative, entrepreneurial, I like coming up with new things. And they're like, well, actually, there's a lot of red tape. We're highly regulated by the government, which, once again, me not thinking. So I was like, all right, well, I guess this isn't for me then. The interview ended at that point.
He did something similar when he tried working in sales. Drove out to Las Vegas to work at a production company, but after a month realized he wasn't happy. Marciniak says he wanted to do his own thing and the sales gig didn't give him enough autonomy. So in a recession when college grads were starving for jobs, he left and drove back to Champaign.
At that point, I didn't have any money either. So I was like, on my way home, I didn't get a hotel. I just slept in truck stops and, you know, just made sure that I was locked in and, you know, made sure I was had my protection.
Wow.
So it was a little sketchy, I guess. But
your parents were cool with this?
They didn't know.
That's when he really started putting heart and soul into track bill. He slept on a friend's couch and survived on peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. Cheap, but filling. The first year, Marciniak says he wasn't able to afford paying himself a salary. He says he tried not to think about when track bill was going to run out of money.
Because I knew it was always around the corner. And in thinking back before we got this investment money, I don't even know how we would have did it at that point. You know, like, there was so many points where I'm glad I just didn't think about it, because there's no way it would have happened if I actually put any reasonable thought process into it.
Since then, things have turned around. TrackBuilt was accepted into a startup boot camp in St. Louis, providing the company not only with funding, but also legal, accounting, and marketing mentors. There's still a lot of risk.
With something like this, it's like we could go bankrupt tomorrow, or we could be worth, you know, a few million bucks by the end of the year.
Things are going well enough that TrackBuilt's 17-year-old web developer has decided to stick with the company, deferring his acceptance to his dream school, Georgia Tech, for at least a year. An angel investor has swooped in, and TrackBuilt recently learned it won an Arch grant. It's part of a program meant to foster an entrepreneurial culture in St. Louis, which means that TrackBuilt will no longer be an Illinois-based company. Tack up one loss for Illinois in the border war between states as they try to keep and create jobs. Marciniak's careful to say that Chicago and Illinois have great startup cultures, too.
But St. Louis, it's a big focus of theirs right now. I mean, it's not just something that's kind of being put on the back burner. Like, yeah, you know, we'll try and look good by sponsoring a few entrepreneurship bills, and then, you know, we're done. They're actually making a lot of very progressive steps to make sure that that becomes a reality.
Call it a lesson in politics. It may be the first of many. Marciniak hopes to eventually make deals with states so it's easier to scrape data from their websites. But there are other companies that offer legislative monitoring services. And at least in Illinois, procurement rules and deals involve a lot of the red tape and bureaucracy that led him to flee NASA. Another lesson in government?
My realization has been that there's so much about government that's not really as transparent as it could be.
He says that's part of his goal, taking information that's already available for free on government websites and making it more accessible. To that end, you can use TrackBuilt to track 3 pieces of legislation for free. To follow any of the additional 6,131 bills introduced in Illinois will cost you. After all, this 23-year-old entrepreneur is also out to make some money. I'm Amanda Vinicky.
And this is WILL. A longtime fixture in Champaign-Urbana's music scene has passed away. John O'Connor died on Memorial Day at the age of 96. He played the trumpet for most of his life and taught music at the University of Illinois for 20 years. O'Connor was a founding member of the local Dixieland band Medicare 7, 8, or 9, which started to foster goodwill on the U of I's Urbana campus during the Vietnam War. O'Connor was a World War II veteran, and in 2008, he talked about his experience during the war with WILL-TV producer Denise LaGrassa.
John O'Connor served a dual role in the Army Air Corps during World War II. After becoming chief aircraft commander of a new plane known as the B-24 Liberator, the former high school band director set out to lift morale by forming a swing band consisting of members of his airborne crew.
There's a string bass, and we had a clarinet, and we had the trumpet, a saxophone, and we took off from our airbase. When we leveled off, I let the co-pilot fly, and I'd get out my horn. See, they had nothing to do when they weren't manning their guns. And eventually the commander said, I don't mind if you're playing those horns as long as you're not out of contact with the German Air Force there. So we would be free from any interruption until we crossed the Adriatic Sea and got into Yugoslavia. That's where we'd pick up the first enemy airplanes. Immediately, the instruments were in their cases and out of the way, and were on their guns. And they would stay that way the whole flight to the enemy targets and coming back. The moment we got past the Italian Alps, we could get our horns out again and play until we landed. And we played Tiger Rag, we played Tea for Two, Dixieland mostly.
The musical bond formed aboard the B-24 Liberator served in uniting crew members as they prepared for a daring attack in August of 1943 on the German-controlled Palesti oil fields in Romania. The Palesti raid was the first large-scale, low-level daytime attack on a heavily defended German target. Military planners believed that destruction of the refineries would halt Hitler's ability to refuel and wage war. When the enemy began their attack on John O'Connor's squadron, he fought back with musical style, employing an attack strategy complete with rhythmic patterns.
That was my first mission of that type there, and all I had in my mind was to get away from those people. The fighters that followed us, I tried something different that I thought was saved our necks, and that was up, down, left, right, left, right. Well, my wingmen had a hard time staying with me, but they overshot us. So we soon lost those airplanes. We didn't fool around with us anymore. They wasted all their ammunition. And my gunners were all intact and shooting like mad. We got credit for shooting three German fighters down for that mission.
John recalls a challenging moment when he was summoned to the back of his airplane. His co-pilot, equipped with only 100 hours of flight training, had to take control of the squadron and fight the enemy while John attended to a crew member in need of medical attention.
When I knew we were in trouble, particularly when we lost the engines, I let the co-pilot fly. And the tail gunner, he was hit by a 20-millimeter shell out of a Messerschmitt in the tail and blasted out of his turret that he operated near death, you know. You had to get back there. I couldn't send him back because he was too nervous. When he saw blood, he turned white, you know. My tail gunner was wounded so badly he died. So that was definitely sad.
John lost his friend while the bombs dropped. Of the 177 bomber planes that took part in the Palesti raid, 54 were never heard from again. O'Connor flew 50 missions before returning home to continue a lifelong career as a music educator at the University of Illinois. Now, as then, one principle continues to serve him.
When you think about everything that happened in these battle scenes and so forth, really, all of it goes back to how you were trained and how you were experienced in life. No matter who you were or what kind of a squadron you were in, the principles were the same. Honesty.
That was John O'Connor speaking in 2008 with WYLL-TV producer Denise LaGrassa. O'Connor, who died on Monday at the age of 96, was a longtime musician in Champaign-Urbana for more than 40 years. This is WYLL.
Support for today's broadcast comes from Subaru of Champaign County, featuring the Subaru Impreza, with standard all-wheel drive and an EPA highway rating of 36 mpg, depending on conditions. More information is available at SubaruofChampaign.com or at their location on Route 45 in Savoy.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Thursday, the 30th of May, 2013. It was on this day, 1431, Joan of Arc was burned at the stake in Rouen, France, a martyrdom that made her a saint and made her a national icon in France. Julian Barnes said that Joan of Arc is to France what Robin Hood is to England. Statues of her all over parks, churches in France. Nearly every French town has a street named for her, Jeanne d'Arc. She was a 13-year-old peasant girl when she began to hear voices in her garden, the voices of Saints Michael, Margaret, and Catherine, who told her that she needed to save France, which at the time was engaged in a war against the English. The English had the French town of Orléans under siege, and in April 1429, Joan asked the French government for troops that she could lead to liberate the city. She had met with the crown prince, and with theologians, they thought she could be of use, and so she was given an army to command, which she led going into battle wearing a white suit of armor, carrying up high a banner with an image of the Trinity. She was hit in the shoulder by an English arrow, but she survived, and her army succeeded in liberating Orléans, and the English troops fled, and Joan's army took over. In another battle, she was taken hostage by Burgundian troops and sold to the English, who imprisoned her for over a year. She was chained to a wooden block while interrogators tried to extract confessions from her. Then in February 1431, she was brought to trial under an ecclesiastical court. She stuck to her story that she'd heard the voices of saints, and it was they who commanded her to serve France, which convicted her of heresy. And on this day, when she was 19, she was burned at the stake, exonerated 25 years after she died, canonized in 1920.